The Advisors, story by Sergeant Ray Wolfe, USMC, from the March 1971 Leatherneck magazine, reprinted in March 2021, as read by Nick Wilson, had barely peeked over the horizon as the Marines maneuvered into position. They'd already been on the move for nearly 3 hours. The battalion commander made last-minute checks on everyone's position, then nodded to his radio operator to give him the handset. The message he sent was, "Fire!" In the distance, two batteries of Vietnamese Marine 105mm howitzers barked their reply. As the volley upon volley whistled overhead and impacted in the tree line, the Vietnamese colonel and his American Marine advisor crouched low and waited under the artillery fire's cover. The forward elements began closing on the target with fire team rushes. As suddenly as it had begun, the artillery stopped and the lead elements assaulted the battered tree line. Surely, no one could still be alive in the tree line, yet orange flashes from a machine gun quickly proved that Charlie was still there. The enemy's aim was good. Three men fell, others dove for cover. A corpsman was attending to the wounded as a perfect shot from a Marine's M79 grenade launcher silenced the Viet Cong bunker. As smoke began drifting from the machine gun's former position, a trio of Vietnamese Marines left the battalion command post and headed for their casualties. Leading the way, a Vietnamese Marine sprinted to stay ahead of the others while the last man struggled with a field radio, trying to keep up with the group and still not lose any of his equipment. In the middle, standing a head taller than the two Vietnamese, the USMC advisor presented a possible target for any would-be snipers as he slogged through knee-deep rice paddy mud. The Vietnamese were obviously losing the battle to keep up with his strides. A quick look at the wounded told the advisor an emergency medevac would be needed. A landing zone was established as the advisor radioed his request. Suddenly, firing broke out at the other end of the tree line. The enemy had been aware of the futility of retreat. The battalion had been surrounded. Sporadic fighting continued as the U.S. Army helicopter arrived overhead. The firing intensified as the Vietnamese Marines attempted to keep Charlie's head down when the bird landed. The advisor threw a smoke grenade and stood up as the helicopter made its landing approach, then directed the pilot's landing with arm signals. As the helicopter touched down, casualties were loaded aboard and the advisor directed it to take off. As the bird lifted, the Vietnamese Marine dove for cover from small arms fire whistling over his head. The remainder of the day was spent routing the enemy force. As the battle ebbed, the advisor found time to jot down notes of the day's action, pointing out his suggestion to the commander to move out under cover of darkness, adding an element of surprise. He had directed 5 U.S. artillery missions, coordinated 4 flights of fixed-wing aircraft, and 3 additional medevac missions. Now it was time to get some chow and a little rest before radioing in the night artillery coordinates. There are some who might have been tempted to pass up a meal after hearing the menu. Rice, pork, chicken, bamboo sprouts, squash, cucumbers, and boiled greens, seasoned with extremely hot peppers smothered with putrid-smelling sauce made of fermented fish, called Nuoc Mam. It would be prepared by the headquarters squad in their cooking pot. For the advisor, eating the Vietnamese food was merely one more facet of a wide pattern of strange things to which he'd become accustomed. For a man serving a tour as an advisor in Vietnam, his time is dominated by changes. He gets on a plane heading for home. He'll be changing and adapting. The major reason for changes is the fact that the Vietnamese people are very proud and set in their ways. The quicker a Westerner shows a willingness to learn new customs, the quicker he'll be accepted. An advisor couldn't exist if he weren't accepted by the South Vietnamese. The degree of acceptance and confidence is directly correlated to the degree of success he'll enjoy in his assignment. A new advisor will find himself assigned to either the battalion or brigade. To help him through his tour, he's assigned Vietnamese Marines, a driver, a radio operator, and a versatile individual known as his cowboy. A cowboy is much the same as a business executive's Girl Friday. He'll do laundry, cook meals, carry equipment, clean weapons, and in general, be a bodyguard. Acts of bravery by cowboys under fire have made the position one of envy and prestige, usually assigned to combat-proved veterans. The job of advising is viewed differently by various advisors. They all agree on one point. It's a very rewarding job, one that calls for not only military knowledge, but also tact and persuasiveness. Major E.G. Rivers spent his first tour as an advisor to the 2nd ARVN Division and was assigned to the Vietnamese Marines. Formed in October 1954 with a strength of 1,437 men, the Vietnamese Marine Corps was tasked with surveillance of waterways and amphibious operations on the coast and rivers. Because of its success in combat operations throughout the Mekong Delta, the Corps was upped in strength to 3 battalions in 1959. The first USMC advisors in Vietnam arrived in late 1950s in the form of an assistant naval attaché and a single advisor to the fledgling Vietnamese Marine Corps. By 1962, the Vietnamese had 5 battalions of Marines, with 1 American Marine advisor assigned to each. During a 1-year tour in this time, an advisor could count on spending more than 30% of his time in the field and the rest on training problems. As the tempo of the war increased, so did the number of advisors and their responsibilities. With the introduction of U.S. helicopters as a supporting element, the advisor thus became an air controller. In 1964, American Marines were filling billets with Vietnamese Army units in addition to the Marine Corps. The large buildup of American forces in the mid-1960s brought the advisors another realm of responsibility, liaison with U.S. ground units. During Operation Blue Marlin, Vietnamese and U.S. Marines landed on adjacent beaches after being quartered and fed aboard U.S. ships. The cooperation enjoyed by the two units brought these words of praise from Pulitzer Prize-winning correspondent Peter Arnett. The U.S. and Vietnamese Marines are working together in an ideal arrangement, one not enjoyed elsewhere in the country. Arnett's observations stem from the successful technique of winning your counterpart's respect and admiration through hard work. To visualize the obstacles that had to be overcome by the advisors, consider the following situation. The advisor had no command authority whatsoever. His counterpart usually was senior in rank, older, and had more combat experience. The advisor had to brave the same degree of risk, and sometimes more, because his physical size and the task of assisting helicopters made him a primary target. During the early years, many advisors knew little or no Vietnamese, and their counterpart's command of the English language was limited. Many times, an advisor would use pidgin English or sign language to get information so they could direct jet aircraft on bombing runs. For the advisor on the ground in battle, it was a case of having no real say in what happened, but being responsible to ensure that it happened well. The Marines tackled the situation with the equation. The success of the advisor's efforts to win the respect and cooperation of his Vietnamese counterpart is the direct equation of professional competence and knowledge multiplied by the amount of time that the advisor and counterpart spend together. It proved to be the needed formula. The Marines achieved their goals by getting to know their Vietnamese commander, his personal traits, the men of his unit, and most of all, customs of the country. For the Vietnamese commander, it was no longer a case of just another American showing up full of well-intended, if not always practical, suggestions. Now, it was an American who took an interest in the commander's country and showed a real desire to be helpful while still being respectful. A plaque on the wall of the advisor's headquarters in Saigon sums it up with these words. The patient but persistent advisor, who hears his counterpart ask, "What do you think?" has just been informed that he is a success. Throughout his tour, the advisor has one goal in mind, to work himself out of a job. Meaning that when the Vietnamese Marines are good enough to do the job without the assistance of an advisor, except for liaison and translation duties, they've achieved their mission. As Major Rivers was preparing to rotate to the States, he had the chance to see his unit operate on their own. When the Vietnamese moved into Cambodia along the Mekong River, May through June 1970, advisors were only allowed to go about 20 miles into Cambodia, but the Vietnamese kept going, he recalled. And keep going they did, through some of the roughest fighting they'd ever been in. The situation was a little hard to swallow at first. The advisors had been with these outfits for nearly a year, and now they were really in a fight. The advisors couldn't be there with them. After thinking it over, Major Rivers realized this was their goal they'd been working for. Pridefully, he commented, "They're proving what a job the advisors have done. They're fighting the war on their own and doing a damn fine job of it."